So. Grüezi miteinander. Und herzlich willkommen. Ich habe zu früh angefangen reden, gell?
Nein.
Nicht?
Alles gut.
Alles gut?
Alles gut.
Es fadet nur noch nicht so richtig aus.
Ja.
Jetzt.
Ja, das ist gut.
Okay. Grüezi und herzlich willkommen bei Danke Vreni. Das ist die Episode 69, wie immer steht der Thomas Ritter.
Grüezi miteinander. Und ebenfalls immer da ist der Ferdinand.
Grüezi, grüezi.
Oh nein!
Oh nein, Thomas, das hast du gemacht.
Oh Gott, ich habe ja, ja. Gut. Konfigurationsfehler.
Tja, kann passieren. Wir haben das ja schon so lange nicht mehr gemacht, wir sind ein bisschen aus der Übung.
Richtig.
Das ist unsere Ausrede.
Das ist unsere Ausrede, ja, genau. Was gibt es also noch? Genau.
Effektiv, sind uns noch nicht los. Die noch zulassen.
Noch nicht, ja. Ja.
Und ist das eigentlich bei den Podcasts auch so wie auf YouTube, dass du immer musst veröffentlichen, wenn möglich irgendwie jeden Tag?
Ja.
Und sonst bist du weg von der...
Ich glaube, Regelmäßigkeit wäre angebracht.
Ah, verdammt. Es wird nichts mit der Welt herrschen.
Nein, ich glaube auch nicht.
Tja.
Wir dümpeln in der Nische. Ja, ja. Wir haben wieder mal einen Gast. Und treue Hörer kennen ihn schon. Unser englischsprachiger Gast, der einzige bisher. Und
bis
jetzt haben wir noch nicht mitgekriegt.
You have a very unique position in our guest list.
The only allowed English speaker.
Yes, exactly.
We won't allow anyone honor. But you. So feel honored.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Nice, right. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thanks for having
it's
me.
It's been actually 2 years. I looked it up.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's been July of 2016 when we last recorded.
Wow.
And we recorded at my place. I'm still living at the same place. And actually, remember, we had the lights out. Do you remember that?
Oh.
It was really... I don't think I actually put the lights on, not even dimmed. I really remember that because towards the end we were sitting in the dark.
That's right.
And I was right. And I think we have to recreate that. So I think we need to turn off this. It's way too...
Okay. it's not a problem.
No, I just realized once we started, yeah, much better.
Okay.
That's nice.
Like 400 lux lower now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like I now can ease into my nerdiness. This is stellar atmosphere. So yeah, welcome back.
Thanks.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't believe it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, but it feels like a long time ago, but also not a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. We switched jobs a few times in between.
Yes.
We just discussed that. we had dinner already, so we talked a lot already.
Yeah, we're actually at Jeremy's place this time.
Yes, that's right. That's what I wanted to get at. Yeah, we're not at my place. We're actually at Jeremy's place in Luzern, which is good. We always like to travel.
Yes, we have our mobile podcast equipment, so we're totally up for traveling.
It's pretty impressive to see how you guys like pull this equipment out of a bag and you're just like recording. It's awesome.
Yeah, we have to say though, we had really time to practice.
Yeah, sure.
We started in 2012.
Yeah. Wow.
And now it's 2018, so that means it's right now it's almost 6 years because we started in August. So
it's a lot of episodes. How many?
69.
This is 69.
69th, yes.
Yeah.
And I've also had other podcasting projects alongside it.
Yeah.
You also are dabbling, but there's nothing
nothing's
published yet, which I very much disagree with.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I won't talk about it.
Yes, it's fine.
Ship it.
It's fine. Don't talk about it.
Anyway. Yeah, you can make it louder here, by the way.
Okay.
So just some...
Yeah, this is the headphone preamp.
Exactly.
Cool. You have your own knob, your number three.
Number three.
Awesome. Cool stuff. So yeah, this is the part where you usually get into feedback. And we had some feedback. From Bernhard. And he basically... told us about, we talked about YouTube last time. This is such a long time ago.
I have no idea what we talked about.
I skimmed it before again because I always read the comments when they come in.
Yeah.
But I sometimes forget to answer or just decide to answer on the show. But if you don't do an episode for 3 months, which we you kind of tend
terrible.
To forget.
We're terrible.
We're really terrible. Yeah. We're going to be better soon.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about YouTube and why the damn thing won't run in the background.
Oh.
It doesn't, right? It's super annoying. Sometimes you just want to listen to some music.
On the phone.
On the phone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to keep it awake. You cannot even push the app away, right? Because otherwise it stops playing. And he told us that there's some kind of YouTube Red subscription, yeah, apparently. Mm-hmm. And then you can run the app in the background. So you have to pay for it. That's kind of a...
Is this related to the fact that people primarily want to use YouTube to listen to music for free?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably. I think that's the key. That's why they won't do it. Also, we talked about you don't see ads, right? If you're
right,
if it's in the background, so it's kind of, they would have to do audio ads, which they don't at the moment, really. I mean, you hear the video, the audio from the video, right? But mm-hmm. it's not the same. It's not made for just listening in to the ad, right?
Yeah.
So that's why they have to keep forcing you to. And there's no ads on YouTube Red, so they can now.
Yeah,
but that's still not available in Switzerland, right?
Exactly, which is always the case.
Like, so this was announced, like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years ago or something.
Exactly.
By YouTube, and still nowhere.
But that's such a Google thing to just not release stuff outside the US just for other markets, and they're like leaving it there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Weird stuff. Yeah. He agreed about the reality TV show thing. Ferdinand, you have Netflix?
Yep.
You have. There's lots of reality TV shows now coming up, and Ferdy doesn't like them.
No.
Yeah. I haven't watched them. but
I don't like reality TV in general. Yeah. It's not my style.
I also don't really watch it, no.
Yeah. I like documentaries.
Yeah.
Like proper, like well-produced, you know, stuff that goes into a topic. But reality TV is definitely not that.
I mean, there is some reality TV that's tolerable, but when they start adding the dramatic music, you know, in between moments and stuff, you know, it's gone bad.
But that's always they have to keep you around for the ads, right? It's like they have to foreshadow what's gonna happen five times until it happens, right?
Yeah. You watch the repeat over and over again.
Yeah, that's like, when I'm at my parents' place, I sometimes watch TV with them, and I'm always shocked what TV has become, or I'm just not used to it anymore. Yeah, I really don't know which one it is.
I heard that like ProSieben, which we used to watch back in the 90s, which is still a thing, they like do like 10 to 15 minutes ad blocks now.
10 to 15 minutes.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
Like, because the poor assholes that still watch the ads, you know, because, you know, there's lots of people that have digital video recorders now and they can skip the ads, right?
Mm.
So, like, lots of people do that, or they have this, you know, this live feature that they, you know, you can pause and then it records for you.
Right, right.
Right. So you can then, if you have enough buffered up, you can then skip the ad later on, right? Because they do that, of course, because now less people are watching the ads, they have to, you know, add more ads. Because the poor assholes who are still watching the ads, they now get screwed twice.
That makes sense, yeah.
But that's how it goes, apparently.
Wow.
Which is,
it's weird. Insane.
It's a weird world.
I've noticed that in the US too. I was just back recently and was watching television with my mother, and I was just horrified at how long and painful the advertisements were.
Yeah. Maybe we're also just not used to it anymore. Maybe that probably has always been like this and we're not used to it anymore.
I mean, I was an early adopter of TiVo, I think, you know, a DVR in my household since it was invented. And now everything's online, of course. So.
Yeah. But the thing in the US that really was weird to me, and we talked about it in the past, is the whole medication ads.
Oh, yes.
I only knew that from some parodies, and I didn't think that that's actually happening.
I mean, we have those too, but they're not like usually not prescription medicine and stuff.
Yeah,
it's usually like stuff you can just go and get.
Yes,
because there's no point in advertising prescription medicine on TV, at least like here.
Yeah, not so much.
Not so much. Yeah.
But it's always like this, and ask your doctor about X and Y.
Yes.
And then they really they really scramble the whole, how you call them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The disclaimers.
Disclaimers, yeah. Have you seen it in the U.S.? Because in the U.S., it's even worse than Europe. They get really into the details about what can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll talk about some great drug that you can do to help your back pain and so forth. And then towards the end of the ad, somebody will start talking really fast.
Yeah, yeah, so exactly.
Warning, may cause loss of retinas, and yeah. you may lose your ass, and so and so.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's like all this stuff happens. Exactly. And then you're like, oh my God, that sounded really terrifying.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually, I watched a documentary on Netflix recently. It's called Bleeding Edge,
mm-hmm.
The Bleeding Edge.
Yeah.
You should watch it. It's absolutely terrifying. It's about medical devices and how they're not properly regulated like they should be. Mm. You know, there's like the FDA and everything. They approve medical devices, right? Yeah. But apparently that process is really flawed, because what you can do is you can basically, if your medical device is close enough to a previous version, then you can have like an expedited process,
uh-huh.
you know?
But, okay.
But that's the case even if the previous version of the medical device is not sold anymore because of reasons, you know?
Mm.
That this doesn't matter. So even, you know, like there could be this whole evolution of a medical device with various versions that failed in the market or were just, you know, were really flawed in some way and they're not produced anymore, but you can still, based on the approval of those, you can still get new medical devices out there.
Mm.
And you don't have to prove that you fixed the problem. You just have to prove that they're close enough to what you had before. So this is like, this is insane.
That's awesome.
I watch this and it's horrifying, really. It's wow. really, really, really terrible, because there's like people with, you know, like implants that just, you know, disintegrate in some way,
mm-hmm.
like terrible. It's absolutely horrid. Yeah, go and watch it.
Sounds like terrifying. A lovely date film.
Exactly, actually. It is. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, don't watch this if you're already in. You already have bad mood, right?
Yeah,
it's not the kind of stuff you should watch. Just like you know, Black Mirror. You shouldn't watch that.
Yes.
if you're already
I've heard that.
Not feeling great.
Those are actually shows that need a disclaimer.
Yes.
To warn the audience.
Yeah.
Ask your doctor about Black Mirror.
Yeah. Might cause dementia and sleepless nights.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. So that was mostly it. And apparently Bernhard reads the New York Times and agrees with our assessment that it's cool stuff.
All right.
I think that's all.
Oh, yeah. We were still in feedback.
Exactly.
Drifted off. That's
yeah,
great.
I'm yeah. keeping the braces closed.
That's good. Close the parentheses.
Exactly.
All right.
Right. So I bought an AeroPress. Do you know what that is?
Yes. That is some kind of a drink-making device.
Exactly.
That's some real hipster shit.
That's real hipster shit. I immediately got 5 hipster points. And if I now collect a coffee grinder, I'm allowed into the temple of nerds.
Did you Instagram it?
I didn't.
Oh, come on.
I actually took a
Fuck
photograph.
Jack Thomas.
I actually took a photograph and didn't Instagram. You're right. I took the photograph.
To make it complete.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was step one, take the photograph. Step two, put it on Instagram. And I failed.
Yeah.
Failed at step two. Yeah, I didn't. I have to, actually. Yeah. But yeah, so now I have an AeroPress and it's really... It really tastes great, I have to say. Yeah,
interesting.
It's really good. I was like, I saw the device.
Yeah, and maybe you should explain what the device is, because
exactly.
not everyone will know.
Exactly. So the AeroPress is basically this really $40 coffee maker. And it's actually just a tube. So it's a tube and you put this lid on the bottom and a filter in it, basically. Mm. Then you put in your coffee, the grinded coffee. Pour in some hot water and then you basically stir however long you want, and then you pull down this other tube that basically forces the coffee out of the filter until it's all done, and then at the end you can really just push out the residue or whatever you call it, and then you have your coffee, right? Mm-hmm. That's basically, you just pull it down into a mug, mm-hmm. essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes really well. It's mm-hmm. like, I mean, essentially just coffee brewing, right? But you think that you need some kind of device with the right pressure, but turns out you just need hot water and stir it.
Well, there are certainly people who would disagree with that, but
probably, yeah. But the coffee really, I mean, yeah. I bought it from a place where you actually also get the grinded coffee, right. And you can filter by the strength of the coffee and the, I know how you call that, how big the grains are, mm-hmm. Yeah, like that kind of thing. And they also tell you the flavors. So I have one that's like mildly roasted with chocolatey flavors or whatever, and it really tastes great, I have to say.
Nice.
It's really, it's not bitter at all. That's what I don't like coffee that's bitter. Mm-hmm. And if you do it in those Italian mocha machines, they really turn out bitter sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't keep the grinds out of your cup so well.
Also, yeah, but yeah. I wonder if that's what's causing the bitterness.
Don't know.
Yeah.
You'd need a team of scientists to confirm
exactly
what was going on there.
Some coffee nerds are probably screaming in agony right now, but it's like, but yeah, I don't know. It just tastes better. I don't know. And if it costs $40, which is insanely cheap compared to a coffee machine.
I find it amazing the culture around coffee. People are religious about how they like and how they expect their coffee. And some people just, you know, they go the Starbucks route. And did you know the Starbucks coffee apparently has one of the highest caffeine levels of any commercial coffee, which is part of the reason people crave it so much and they're not satisfied by other coffees?
Interesting.
Then you have the Nespresso crowd here in Switzerland, which I can't understand people who want to drink their coffee out of a machine, which is pressing it out of a plastic capsule.
Yeah.
I mean, as environmentally conscious as this country is, and also as much as we are about making things ourselves, you know, it's like this is like mass slavery. These little, you know, you must use this machine with this special kind of capsule. And
yeah, but it's interesting. It's really taken off in the commercial sector, right?
Yeah,
all the offices have Nespresso machines.
It's kind of kind of chic to have it now, right?
So it's like industry standard.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we need the whiteboard. You know, we need the power strips and the Nespresso machine.
That's exactly, yeah.
But I tell you a secret. Like, for years, my wife and I have been drinking boring instant coffee.
Yeah.
Like the kind you go into Co-op or Migros and just buy it in a jar.
Yeah.
And you put it in hot water and stir it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like embarrassed when people come over and they want a cup of coffee and I pull out instant coffee and they're like, oh my God. What are you doing? Where's your espresso machine?
Yeah.
I brought some capsules of my favorite flavor and I can't use them. What is wrong with you people? And it's just like terrifying.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have that. I have I have a problem with coffee too, in that I don't really drink coffee. Like, because usually like the caffeine doesn't really work on me. Like, I'm pretty much, I don't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
I will only notice it when I drink like lots and lots of coffee and then my heart rate is increased.
Same, actually.
But other than that, I don't feel like more awake after drinking coffee at all. So like this is, and that's the reason why I don't have a coffee machine at home at all. Like not even an AeroPress or something like that. Because, yeah, but then, I mean, if I have people over, then, you know, they want a coffee and I don't have a machine, right? That's like, that's just the thing that can happen.
Yeah. It's funny that you mention it because I work from home now since March, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a few months. And I had one of those capsule thingies because my mom won it from Migros because she had enough points, whatever. They throw it at you anyway because they make the money out of the capsules, right? So my mom was like, I don't need this machine, but I got it anyway for free. And she gave it to me, I think even I was 7 years ago or whatever. Yeah. And I still had that machine because I didn't drink coffee at home, only when I'm at the office or wherever, right?
Yeah, coffee for me is like a social thing.
Exactly.
That's the utility of drinking coffee, is having a coffee break for me.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then I started working from home and I was like, I kind of need a coffee right now.
Really?
Yeah, and then I was like pulling these capsules in, right? And I had them over and I just decided, okay, once this box is empty, I'm not going to buy any more of these things. And that's why I bought the AeroPress. So yeah, now I feel a bit better.
So now there's no limit.
Now there's no limit. I'm just liters of coffee.
No, that's actually reasonable. I should probably also get an AeroPress or like a Macchinetta, like, you know, the silvery things that you put on the stove, right?
Yeah, these are nice, actually.
I love them for how they look, how they smell. The whole experience is great. It's just almost always it's bitter. I don't like the I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's me.
I
don't
know. Well, it's also you have to constantly like clean and care for these things.
Yeah.
And
the AeroPress is really, you can just, I don't know, just pour water over it and it kind of gets clean, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. It's really easy to clean. So I don't know. Okay. Now I'm sounding like an AeroPress salesman.
I
don't make any money.
Next time.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask your doctor about AeroPress.
Exactly. Next time I'm at your place, I want an AeroPress coffee, and then I can judge for myself if this is something worthwhile.
Yeah. Come over. Yeah. Let's do this.
Okay. Good.
Nice. So yeah, that's my thing. And now I'm really, now I'm at the stage, I'm really on the verge. Do you say on the verge or at the verge?
On the verge.
On the verge.
On the verge, right?
On the verge.
I'm on the verge to coffee nerddom. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's like, now that I have an AeroPress, I kind of also need to grind my own coffee, right?
You did you did listen to the CRE about coffee, right?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Yeah. If you start to roast your own beans,
that's a sure sign of a disease.
Yeah,
mind.
That gets. I have a friend of mine who started roasting his own beans. It's a bit intense.
Good for him, though. I don't know.
Think it's cool, but
as a hobby.
As a hobby, it's nice, right? But if you. Yeah. But yeah.
I'm thinking I might grow my own tea leaves in the backyard and, you know, harvest them
could
and dry them.
Could you do that in Switzerland? Are there any tea leaves that would actually grow here?
I have no idea. But
you can get like nice peppermint growing here.
That's right. For sure. I actually have a peppermint.
My parents do that actually.
I actually have a peppermint plant now in my kitchen, and I do basically peppermint flavored water. I just basically harvest the leaves and put it in the water.
Yeah,
it's nice.
Mint it grows everywhere. You can't stop it. Exactly. You know, these kinds of things.
Yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah. So just for completeness' sake, there's this. CRE episode 119 about coffee.
Yeah,
it's a good episode, but it's in German. it's of this the German podcast Pope Tim Pritlov. That's the guy, and it's like they talk for 2 hours. He talks about coffee with somebody who really knows coffee, so it's a good thing.
Yeah,
good episode. We link it in the show notes. All right,
cool stuff. So yeah, I read this article about the Google Duplex thing. Have you heard of that? Google Duplex. They kind of
demo. It's a translation thing?
It's basically the assistant that makes phone calls for you. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of this. And it caused controversy because for the first time, people realized a computer can call and impersonate a person and you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The impersonation thing, I mean, I don't think that's a different problem. That's also kind of solved, right? They have this Obama, basically the speech synthesis that mimics Obama.
Mm-hmm.
That's also possible now because they made a video where Obama is talking and they just generated text and he spoke it, apparently. That's a problem on its own. But the thing really was like you cannot distinguish this Google Duplex assistant, which is really just speech synthesis, from an actual person.
Mm.
And this is really a very interesting article from a journalist that actually went to a kind of private demo to journalists, and they could actually pick up the phone as a store clerk or store whatever employee and basically take a reservation from this assistant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they could really experience it from the store side, right? How it feels like to get a call like this. And it's really, they also give you examples. It's really, it sounds like a person.
Yeah, it's super creepy.
It's super creepy. And the machine does stuff that to us sounds sarcastic.
Yeah.
It makes like responses like, yeah, sure, which just sounds sarcastic.
Yeah.
This really tiny intonation things that we interpret as sarcasm, which is just a machine. Yeah.
But you know what that is? It's because it was developed in California. And that's just the way people are. It's normal.
Yeah.
And to the rest of the world, they're like, wow, what a tool. But that's actually everybody in California. So it's you know, it's just...
Oh, yeah. That may be right.
It's completely natural.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never been to California, so I wouldn't know. But maybe that's...
I think you might be onto something there, yeah.
I noticed like a lot of the Google products that speak to you, like on Navi and so forth, when you put it in the full-on American voice, it's like this... yeah, super. So turn at the next light, okay? And it's just like...
It's a little sassy or what?
Yeah, it's a little bit sassy. And it's a bit like, hey, you made a wrong turn. Nice.
Yeah. Passive-aggressive navigation. Like,
oh, boy, just turn around. Good, like,
you're a good exit. Driver.
That's amazing.
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah. But really, they actually have parameters. They can turn it realer and less real, right? So wow. For some reason. And they have this, even they can configure lip smacks, apparently. So they turn it off. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you can give it attitude.
Exactly. No, it's just like if you open the mouth, right? Mm-hmm. What is that called? That sound that you make if you open the lips. I don't know.
Lip smack.
Yeah, exactly. No, but there's this click sound, right?
It's the lip separating.
Or breathing, right?
Yeah, breathing also.
Breathing in,
stuff
breathing
like
out,
that.
Like this kind of
so
stuff.
They can really configure that. It's like more of that, less of that.
That's
and
awesome.
Apparently they had to turn it off, or they just didn't turn it on yet. Probably it's not perfect yet, right?
See, I would immediately want to tweak it to see how I can get the maximum amount of lip smacking.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, too bad this is not like public, so everyone could fiddle around with it.
The cool thing is the journalists, they try to how you say, basically get the machine off the conversation path, right? To somehow confuse this machine, and they couldn't do it. It's like it was really determined to get a table for two people between 6 and 8, right?
What if you say, oh, but the restaurant is burnt down or something like
there
that?
There is like this exit. they will say, oh, I have to talk to... Okay. Whoever wants to make the reservation, I'll get back to you. I think that's the exit.
Okay,
the machine.
Okay, good, right. They always basically say, I want to reserve a table, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to fool you into thinking they're a real person who wants to reserve a table.
No, they actually say they're the assistant of someone else.
Oh, okay.
I'm booking a table for Mr. Whatever. Right. That's what they're saying.
That's fine then.
Yeah.
Then it works, because otherwise it wouldn't work, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's also a thing. There was also the debate that the stores didn't know that this was a digital synthesis, right? Yeah. So they now have to say, I'm a whatever. I don't know what the term is.
It's
just some
sense. It's a real breakthrough in kind of social and even society's, you know, expectations about what computers can do. And it was kind of groundbreaking. I remember hearing about this and thinking, you know, the next logical step is when your assistant can actually imitate your own voice. Mm-hmm. And then your computer is making phone calls or connecting with people on your behalf and pretending to be you.
Yeah.
Which is really...
I think that's possible already, probably.
Yeah.
Kind of in a lab, you know, with...
Enough training and so
exactly
on.
Exactly, right. Sure, I think it's already possible, but I really think they cannot roll that. That's kind
imagine
of
what the what this will do to the credit card companies who are used to doing security by phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's all out the window soon, because, no one... Also in court, right? No one believes recording anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah. How do you solve that, right? Already with video, it's kind of, I think it's not even accepted in court in some places anymore because you can just fake it easily.
It raises really interesting questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a place to keep up to date on these kind of questions is a YouTube channel called 2 Minute Papers.
Oh.
By some guy who's into AI, basically. And he every time, like every 2 or 3 days or so, he uploads a new episode where he has like in 2 or 3 minutes or so, he talks about a new paper in AI and machine learning and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because he really illustrates it well as well, because most of these papers come with, you know, some kind of video or whatever it is, right? Or sound or so on, what gets synthesized or so on. And he really it's really well produced, and he explains it really well also for lay people. It's not, you don't have to be an expert in the field, but it really, yeah. So 2 minute, and you get the idea. Basically you're under the impression that you're keeping up to date with whatever's happening.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true, but
it's better than nothing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well,
exactly. It's really cutting edge science right there from yeah, on that channel. So yeah. I can really recommend that one.
Cool. Yes. Nice.
Right. Next is my topic. Yeah, so I don't know if you've tried this, Thomas, at all.
I've seen
you
it,
can,
I think.
You can also sell stuff on Digitech.
Yes.
Right? You can basically sell a thing that you've bought before. So I've done that with my GPS. Basically, for my bike, I had a GPS that was like really cheap, $150 I bought it for, I think. And it was a pretty terrible GPS, like with Windows CE or something running on it. Hmm. And felt really sluggish, you know, the processor was really...
But you bought it new on Digitech.
And everything. Yeah, I bought it new on Digitech.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, okay.
I mean, it's just, it's like, you can feel that it's a really cheap product.
Okay.
I mean, it does its job, but, you know, occasionally it will just not work anymore. You have to restart it. You know, this kind of shit happens.
Like Windows.
Yeah, it's like Windows. Right. I mean, you shouldn't be surprised, right? Because on the back it says Windows CE is in this.
Right.
So, you know... Yeah, I hear things have gotten better with Windows 10, even on you know, embedded devices. Absolutely. But I don't know. So I sold that thing on Digitech through that, through that mechanism, and it was really good.
Somebody bought it.
And recommend it. Yes, somebody bought it.
How long did it take?
Like 2-3 days.
Oh,
yeah, really
impressive.
Good. You can basically set for how long do you want this. How long do you want this to be online? And you can also, basically the way it works is you set a price you want.
But they suggest a price, right?
Yes, they suggest a price, but you can choose it also. Mm-hmm. There's a range you can choose within, I think. And then basically you can choose the minimum you want, right? Mm-hmm. And then basically the way it works is it will get... You can basically say a maximum, the minimum, and it will first go in for the maximum, then will gradually become cheaper as time goes on. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Okay.
If I remember it correctly. Mm-hmm. So the sooner somebody buys, the better, right?
Right.
Because you get more money. But yeah. So that way I sold the thing. It was really good. Can recommend. The only thing is you get by default, you don't get the money. But you get, of course, like credit
on Digitech.
But you can tell them I want it paid out into an account or whatever. Mm, yeah. You can do that. You don't have to spend it on Digitech again.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I buy stuff there anyway, I
doesn't
don't
matter.
Mind.
Yeah.
And they take like 20% something.
Yeah, they take like a percentage. I forgot how much, but
it's pretty high.
Yeah. It's not cheap in that regard. Yeah. It's just, you know, I wanted to try it, and I also sort of like it that because you don't have to do anything, right? You can basically go to the Digitech page for the product and say, I want to sell this, and that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Right. You don't really have to write a description, upload pictures, and all this shit.
It's convenient.
Right? Yeah, it's very convenient. Yeah.
The problem I have is that almost everything I bought from Digitech, which I'd like to get rid of, is broken.
That's the problem.
That doesn't work.
Because a lot of electronics, I think I bought like, I don't know, 6 or 7 USB power hubs from them over the last, and it's not their fault at all. It's just the nature of consumer electronics, you know.
Yeah.
I guess if you're going for better quality stuff. One thing that's really cool is like in categories like cameras and lenses and things like that, you could totally use this to upgrade constantly.
Yeah.
You know, which is nice.
Yeah. So.
Sure.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And then basically another thing I wanted is a new amplifier, right? Because like I had one, but it was sort of bad. Like it made this ugly noise, ugly, like very loud, like white noise for a short amount of time. Every time you would sort of switch on a digital audio source, right? So when you like, I had my TV connected to it, through the optical audio.
Yeah.
Right.
That's pretty normal. Yeah.
Yeah. So I turned it on, and then, you know, I would turn on the TV and it would just go like,
yeah,
but really fucking loud. So annoying. That was really, really bad. So I wanted to get rid of it for that reason. I didn't buy it on Digitech, and this was like, I had it for a long time.
Yeah.
So in the end, I ended up just giving it away to somebody who wanted it.
Okay.
But I bought a new amplifier.
Yeah.
Basically, I had this one amplifier that I wanted that Digitech had, which has just was, you know, the right size. It was the right connections and everything was perfect. So I absolutely wanted it, but it was not, you know, it was not
in stock.
Not on stock.
Mm.
So I was like, probably I shouldn't order
you
this
shouldn't
there.
You shouldn't order this there.
Exactly, because we had like bad experience with that.
Yeah.
So, but then I rechecked it later on, and then all of a sudden somebody sold a used one. And I was like, nice. Mm-hmm. I will take it.
Nice.
So I took it, I got it delivered, but then the remote didn't work. So basically the remote worked, but the thing didn't react to the remote.
Mm-hmm.
And with these amplifiers, you can't really use them without the remote. So, yeah. So I gave it back and basically told them I want this repaired.
Uh-huh.
But in the end, they just gave me the money back instead of repairing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
and you couldn't order a new remote from the...
I mean, it wasn't the remote. The remote worked. It was the receiver.
That really was the problem.
Yes, it didn't receive the signals.
So people can sell stuff used on Digitech that doesn't work, and they have take the money back.
I don't know, actually.
That sounds like an excellent scam.
Maybe, maybe. I mean, maybe it worked at their place, and then and while shipping it, it broke or
could
something.
Be,
I have no idea. But anyway, I got my money back, so that's fine, I guess. I would have liked it to be replaced, but, you know. And then... basically, I was back at square one, right? I wanted this thing, this particular thing, but I couldn't get it. Of course, you can't really get it on Amazon because, like...
Switzerland?
It doesn't ship to Switzerland, as usual, right? Especially if it's things that are not, like, super mainstream, like, or super common, then you don't get them delivered to Switzerland.
Yeah.
So I found another online shop where I bought it in Switzerland. That's, like, a Swiss electronics online store thing, and got it from there, like, for a good piece of money more, but it's fine. It's a great thing. I wanted it.
That's cool.
Yeah, now I have it. Yeah, that's my story about Digitech.
Nice.
yeah so another thing is I use this MyPost 24. Do you know about that?
I have heard of it, yeah.
What is it?
There's like these boxes at like train stations stuff that are like, where you can get your your packets delivered to. And then you get an email and you can go there and basically scan a QR code and then it opens the box.
Oh, okay.
And you can take your stuff out. You can even send packets that way if you want. So I use that a couple of times because usually I'm not home when they come, right?
Yeah.
When they deliver the packages. And so I have to go to the post office to get it. So for me, it's ideal because in Bahnhof Olten, they have one of these machines.
Yeah.
Perfect. I can just get it from on my way back home.
And you don't have to take it on the train home, which is also annoying.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I use it for Digitech pretty much uniquely.
The boxes are limited in size. I mean, you can...
There's different sizes, various sizes. There's fairly big ones as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it would... Like, probably there's like a fallback where when it's really too big or too heavy or whatever, then they don't put it in there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But they will actually contact you in some way to, you know, get it delivered to you. Or something like that, I think.
Nice.
But anyway, I had some technical glitches with that thing. Like once I got an email, your thing is here. And then I went there and it said, oh, no, your thing is not here. Right. When I tried to open it, I was like, what the fuck?
So, oh, no.
There was like a technical problem because I think it just sent the email too early or something like that. And only the next day I could actually get it. Like weird things like that. Can happen sometimes.
Okay.
This. I think not all the technical issues are ironed out.
Yeah.
But
that's postal issues are interesting. I recently had the most ridiculous experience I've ever had in Switzerland with postal problems where my mailbox delivery was basically canceled for about 5 weeks.
What?
So what happened was I rent this house and the owner lives in Bern and they apparently got a letter a long time ago that was saying that the post office people should not be climbing stairs, especially in the winter.
Mm.
And these old houses have the post box by the door.
Mm.
So they said, you must install a post box on a pole by the sidewalk.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, some of the houses around here had a post box on a pole, uh-huh. but it was like next to the house. So it's like next to the stairs. It wasn't on the street. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know about this. And one day, we postman came by and said, like, you know, basically, why the hell haven't you done this? You know, like he was kind of outraged. And it turns out after some discussion, some investigation, our landlord finally said, oh, yeah, I got this letter like, you know, 10 months ago.
Oh, no.
And so my wife says, look, we got to get a post box. So I go to, I think it was a Migros Bauen Hobby. And anywhere in Switzerland, you have the official post box that you can get that's got the Swiss Post registered. You know, yes, the Swiss Post likes this box. There's like really? Three different variations, you know. You can choose the color. It can be green or red or white or black, but that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And then we got this box and in the pole. I dig a hole in the ground. I stick it in the ground with some concrete, and I put it approximately where my neighbors have mm-hmm. theirs. Turns out that's wrong. The postman comes by, and he's like, you should put it by the street. You know, my germ is not that good.
Yeah.
My wife told me and I ignored her apparently. Anyway, so the postman was now pissed off. And then suddenly our mail stops coming. And I'm like, what's the problem? Our mailbox is the same place as our neighbors. Then our neighbors get letters. You have to move your mailbox.
Shit.
Now the neighbors are pissed off.
But they don't get letters because of you, do they?
Well, it was kind of like the tipping point.
Did this trigger it?
Okay. Our local post office is like, you know what? Enough is enough with these people. They all must conform now. So everybody in the neighborhood was digging up their post boxes and having to move them. And for about 4 weeks, I had to go. I didn't know what was going on. And I just had to go to the post office in Luzern and pick up my mail. And each time I would go there, they would be like, you know, why haven't you fixed your post box? I'm like, I did. You know, but, and then they would send a letter and it would go to his house and burn. So like, I had no idea. Anyway, yeah. We finally got it resolved. We moved the post box and everything's good again. But, you know, I literally pissed off the Swiss Postal Service so badly they stopped delivering mail.
Yeah.
I'm kind of proud.
I never heard about that happening.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a first. Nice.
But I think they really have to be very efficient in delivering. I don't think that's just the reason they give you, right? The whole, oh, they might slip on a stair.
That's an American reason. No, I think you're right. It's about making their rounds and getting the mail to everybody fast and efficiently.
Because if you look at them, they're like a squirrel on cocaine if they're putting all the...
You actually can't see them because they move so fast. They mm-hmm. evade detection.
Exactly.
Like if you hear the postman's coming, by the time you get to the door and open the door, he's already gone.
Exactly.
They're like superheroes.
Exactly. It's like Heisenberg.
Yeah, the Flash, exactly.
Like the Heisenberg particle, or what is it called?
Yeah, yeah.
Can never detect
uncertainty
location.
Principle.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's right.
Same with the
postal
postman.
Uncertainty principle.
Exactly.
Nice. Nice.
And, you know, I love their electric carts. I swear, I want to get one of their electric carts. They're so cool.
Those are the one from keyboards, right?
I think so. They're just massively awesome, and they accelerate like Teslas. I mean, they're really, really insane.
Their cars are really good.
They're by a Swiss company called Keyboards.
Okay.
Builds them. Yeah.
Do they sell them to consumers?
I think so.
Oh, man, that would be the coolest vehicle ever.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But it's the funniest thing is, I saw one of the postmen on one of those vehicles, right? And school children were basically just walking in front of him on the pavement, right? And he didn't do anything. He was just hovering behind them, waiting for them to leave. But they didn't notice, right, that he's behind them.
I thought you were going to say you ran them over.
I was waiting there. I was really... put out the popcorn and was just watching them.
Yeah.
And it took a minute until one of the kids like just pointed at the guy, and then they realized that they were standing. But I don't know if he just doesn't have a horn or any kind of signaling mm-hmm. that people should move out his way, or if he just was like, oh, whatever, I let these kids walk. I don't know. But it was just so funny. Like, he was really just very slowly driving. And if you've seen them, they're always at full speed, right?
Yeah.
With these kind of things.
Yeah, it's incredible how fast they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed with the speed, actually.
Yeah.
I think the post might be really early adopters of electrical vehicles.
They're way ahead.
They should also replace their like vans, like the ones they use for packages.
I think they need ludicrous mode for those vehicles, right?
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine? It's on the thing and it just presses a button and then it falls off the thing and it drives off. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
Have to try it.
I mean, keyboards are like building this thing called the E-Rod, which is like an electric racing vehicle, like without a roof or anything. Like it's
pretty, like a dune buggy.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty crazy thing.
Is it legal?
Yeah, I think it is legal in the EU.
Cool.
But anyway, this is also, if the post was getting this, then, you know, they could be even faster. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool stuff.
Good stuff.
Any more stuff about the post?
No. Nope. I'm done with the post. Cool.
Done with the post. Screw those fuckers.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
It's been delivered.
Yes.
So I have this printer since 2007. It's from HP. It's a piece of shit. Every time you turn it on and you plug it in, it actually has to reflash the firmware.
What?
Yeah, I read about this.
Wow.
You have to reflash the firmware. So it's actually, you turn it on and then it starts to flash, whatever. I think it was a fault in the whole product.
Yeah.
And that was the reason why it was insanely cheap back in 2007, and I bought it at this Inter discount, right? And it was really cheap, and I was a poor student, and me and my roommate back then was like, oh, this is a very cheap black and white laser printer, let's buy this, right? Mm-hmm. And then we both had Linux, and it didn't work, and it's like, we had to write our own scripts who flashed the firmware. It's like, insane, right? So,
it's awesome.
So my roommate was this kind of guy who prints out everything, right? It's like, at university, you get a handout, he prints it out twice, just to be sure, right? hundreds.
Once for taking notes and once for putting it in a folder in the
exactly
in the cupboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and he really prints out a lot of stuff, and I just printed out nothing, right? I don't believe in paper, so computer science student, it's like, nope. Not gonna do that. Yeah. I was just sitting in class and just listening to the stuff. I never printed out anything. And at some point we decided, okay, we ran out of the, how's it called?
Toner.
The toner, exactly.
Yeah.
And then there was this shady shop ran by, I think, a Turkish guy in Basel. I studied in Basel back at the time. That's how long this was ago.
Yeah.
It's almost not true anymore. And there was this shady shop, I think, run by a Turkish man. And I just went in and showed him the toner, right, the cartridge. And it's like, I read you can refill those things. And he was looking at it. And it's like, oh, yeah, I can do that. And I don't remember if he did it back then in the shop or if he told me to come back. But I somehow remember watching how he did it. Maybe he just opened it to see what's inside or whatever. But he really opened the thing and it was like, okay. And I got it back, basically refilled. That was, I think, 2009.
Mm.
And I printed out more stuff after 2009. Also, my roommates still printed. And when I moved out of there, which was, I think around then, 2010 or so, he's printed a lot of stuff still, right? So I knew that this thing must run out of toner sometime, right? And this was 2010, right? And then I still have that printer now. It still has the same toner thing. I never replaced the toner. It gets lighter and lighter, but it's still fine. You can still read it. It's just a little light, but you can still read it.
Yeah.
And the thing doesn't run out of toner. It's amazing. I don't know what the guy did, how much he filled that thing up.
He actually installed a portal inside of the toner cartridge where he dumps more toner into it from a remote location.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
This is, I mean, I don't print a lot of stuff.
It's like free energy.
It's really like free energy. But, it amazes me. It doesn't stop. And I won't replace the printer. I won't replace the toner until I think, okay, now is the end, right? But I haven't reached that point.
That's interesting.
I mean, I had, like, also at university, I got a laser printer.
Yeah.
I think I got it from my parents because I think they had a new one or whatever. And I just took theirs with me when I moved out, And this thing also, it was running for like 5 years on the same cartridge.
Mm.
And then I passed it on to a friend of mine because I didn't have anything to print anymore.
Yeah. That's actually funny because in that market, you know, for years it was like printers needed to be designed to print as fast as possible.
Yes.
And have the longest duty cycle possible because Lord knows people need to be able to print entire novels.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, you actually need a laser printer that can print like 200 pages in its lifetime.
Yes.
So they might as well make a laser printer with no replaceable parts that's just like good for 200 pages and that's it.
Yeah, but the use case has shifted, right? Now you need a laser printer that you don't touch for a year and then you turn it back on and it needs to print like the first time you turned it on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem now. I think that's a different engineering problem.
Yes.
Like if you design a printer for printing, you know, stuff every day, it's a different problem than, you know.
Yeah.
It just sits somewhere, gets all dusty, and then, you know, someday you decide, oh, I have to print my tax shit, you know, once a year.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Yes, I have to print out this form that I never expected I need to print.
Exactly, because somebody expects like paper from me somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, it used to be concert tickets, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I had to print those out.
Print at home.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
Taxes, as you say, and really flights also. But I started to not print concert tickets. I just have them on my phone.
Yep.
I had basically a trial period where I had it printed out and on the phone.
Yeah.
For a year until I felt certain that I don't need the whole damn paper.
Yeah, exactly.
And now I just use my phone, right? And same thing for flights. Actually, the last few flights I went on, I just didn't have a printed out ticket because anyway, if you just show your passport, it's like, oh, here's your ticket.
Yeah.
You don't need to show them any kind of ticket.
Unless you go to the States and then you better print shit out.
Exactly.
That's a different story.
As soon as you hit customs.
Exactly.
That's
my ESTA form.
I
printed that out. And I think that was the last thing I had to print. It was my ESTA application, right?
Oh my God.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I can barely get into my own country anymore. It's actually quite complicated. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it the same for U.S. citizens?
Yeah, I mean, despite having a U.S. passport, I still have to wait in line for like 3 hours to get through the security unless I filled out all the stuff ahead of time. But then I go online to do that, and it's like, this is for non-citizens. So there's a whole different program. And, you know, they have like 4 or 5 different programs for how you can get fast track into the country. And I just didn't figure it out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I end
up... You
have
to ask one of your fellow expats.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm waiting in line... in Chicago O'Hare, and after like an hour and a half and I've really got to pee, I start looking around and I realize I'm one of like, you know, I'm the ratio of Americans to non-Americans waiting to get into the country is, it's probably like more than half of the people there were American.
Yeah.
And they were just literally like, they hadn't figured out how to get the fast track thing going and they were stuck in line forever. And then the best part is you go to the machine and you fill out your data and you have to fill out something on the plane, and then you fill out something again when you get to the airport, and then they print it out, and it says at the end screen, this is thanks to the Reduction of Paperwork Act.
Yes.
It's like, that's awesome. Yeah. I just went through this whole process and printed again. So back to printing.
Yes.
The U.S. is still very big on printing, I think.
I think so too, yeah. Paper rules still, I think.
Paper is official.
For important stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You had to print your ESTA
application. Because I went to New York.
Mm.
Actually, already in the end of May, so we didn't record.
Yeah.
For I think we recorded before, right? I think 2 weeks before I left.
Yes.
I think was the last time
we
spoke officially.
I mean, is this the longest gap we've ever had?
Pretty much, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Audience, go figure it out.
Exactly. So this was at the end of May. Oh, my computer wants to update Java. Not now.
Do it.
Yes.
We're doing it live.
We might need it.
What could go wrong?
Exactly. What could go wrong? Do it now. Rebooting.
Yes.
Yeah. So I went there for 10 days. It was actually, the idea was that I work from there and also have holidays. So it's kind of working, traveling.
Work and travel.
Yeah. Which was a very stupid idea. Everyone told me, it's like, yeah, you're going to work there. It's like, no, I can do it. I'm a remote worker. I figured this stuff out. And then you get to New York and it's amazing and it's 30 degrees and all you want to see, all you want to do is explore the city and just like not work at all.
Yeah.
So the most.
So did you actually have to work to do? Like, did actually people rely on you doing work there or not?
I mean, my boss was like, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't get to work much.
Okay.
So you're kind of half on holidays, but
that's fine.
Obviously, it's cool if you do work, right? So that's
that's nice.
That's very nice. So I realize now I'm sounding very privileged, which I am. But it's like, you don't have to work if you don't have to. Yeah. If you don't want to.
Exactly.
Just enjoy your time. Yeah. Yes. I don't know. But so yeah, my plan was like getting up in the morning. And working, and then in the afternoon and in the evening you enjoy the city, right? And I had 10 days, so I figured like, yeah, you don't have to do all this stuff in 4 days like everyone else does, right? So you kind of have time. But it was so nice. The weather was so nice. Really 30 degrees Celsius.
It's great. yeah, I was going to say.
It's like, it was cold. No, it was really warm.
In May, it's possible.
Yeah, but it was really warm and the nicest weather, and it was really just the best. And everyone who I met there told me that this was the nicest time. So end of May seems to be the perfect time
nice.
For
That's
New York.
True. Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, you and like 10 million other tourists in the place.
I didn't feel, I mean, it was insanely busy, but I think it's always busy.
You can't really tell in New York because everybody living in New York is from another place anyway.
True. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, of course, you can tell at like the really touristy places, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because only tourists go there. So
if you go to the Disney store or the Apple store at Central Park or whatever, then you're in the middle of it. But
exactly. Yeah. So
the Circle Line.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I actually I had an Airbnb room, basically just a private room Airbnb with this, I think, 70-year-old black guy was really nice. Yeah, it was just like...
What neighborhood was this?
It was Harlem, technically, but it's the north border of Central Park. Okay. So I really was at the border to Central Park. Really, I could see outside the window,
it's
basically.
Still technically upper east or west side, I guess.
Is it? I guess. Okay.
Because I stayed really in Harlem when I was there. Like 135th
Street. Yeah, 125th Street is kind of where that...
I think 116.
Yeah, you're in the gray zone.
Okay.
I think I stayed at 135th Street. So
yeah,
that was
that's
pretty
definitely
much
Harlem.
Yeah.
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 Which is an interesting neighborhood, to say the least.
Yeah, well, it's changed a lot.
Sure. I believe that.
Yeah.
But it has a special vibe to it.
Oh, totally.
Sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was really funny. And this guy, I think he was working in IT, but doing more Photoshop web design stuff. But he seemed very not technical.
Machinas Web.
Exactly.
Genders Online.
Exactly. That's an inside joke. I'm sorry, Jeremy.
No, that's okay.
And I think this guy did web pages in the 90s. He didn't seem like up to speed with anything really, but it's like, he told me he did web design apparently. Yeah. And he was like into Photoshop nowadays. I think he still does something on the side.
Photoshop 3.0.
Probably. Yeah. His equipment looked a little dated. So I don't know. But yeah, he basically just rents out the room to have some more money for his retirement, which makes a lot of sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's really nice talking to the guy. I really enjoy the Airbnb stays in those cities, and you just get to know people.
They kind of made it more difficult in New York, I've heard, because I used to do that a lot when I went back. But I read recently that they passed some pretty strict rules about Airbnb in New York, and they have limits or something like that. I don't know.
Isn't it, though, for the actual full apartments you can rent?
Probably.
Because that's
as soon as you said you had a roommate, that made me think that maybe that's the workaround.
Yeah.
It's shared.
Because I know in San Francisco, I talked to this woman I stayed with, and she told me that she was fighting that you cannot rent full apartments in San Francisco because it just raises the rents for everyone, right?
Right.
Because you just make money out of that, right?
Right. Makes sense.
Makes sense. So I think they were pushing for, okay, Airbnb is allowed for shared, basically shared flats and private rooms, mm-hmm. so, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You're kind of supporting the locals, right? That's good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that and I really enjoyed it. It was really nice.
It's super cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Exactly. But I have to say I didn't sleep as well. I think my neighborhood was really quiet compared to Manhattan in general, I think. Because, I mean, I had this road, right, 116th was just right in front of me. But just the general level, I think we talked about it before, just the general noise level is, compared to Switzerland, is pretty, massive, I have to say. Yeah, and it was so warm that I had to kind of keep the window up, right? Because it was just getting too hot otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like in this thing, so I didn't sleep that well, which added to the whole thing of, I don't want to work.
Yeah. No, your sleep, lack of sleep plus the environment.
Exactly. So that was really tough. So the most I got was 4 hours of work a day.
Did you? Wow. Well, that's still impressive.
I know.
It's not bad.
I know. But that was really, I worked, I think, one hour and a half in the morning and then 2.5 from Williamsburg, from this amazing coffee place. It was really good.
That's cool.
And it was like, the owner was really funny. You could clearly see that he was smoking weed all day. he was just like the chillest dude you could imagine. And I was walking up to him and he was just smiling at me. It's like, I like a coffee, please. And he's like, oh, okay. And I wanted to pay.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, no, just pay later. Pay later. Doesn't matter. Yeah. And then I ordered, I think an hour after I ordered again, like a coffee.
Yeah.
Do you want me to pay now? Ah, no, don't worry. So I figured by the third time I ordered something else, I just pay at the end, right? And then he looked at me like, and he was sighing, and I was like, is there something? He's like, yeah. Would it be a problem to pay? I kind of forgot what you had already.
Yeah.
And it was really like, he tried to be nice, but he only wanted to get money. It was so funny to me.
That's great.
That guy it was really funny.
Yeah.
So I paid him. And I didn't, I wanted to tip because, I wanted to be a good foreigner, right? And tip the guy. No, don't tip.
Really? That's funny.
Weird. I don't know. He refused to get my tip. So I just put the coin on the table. It's like, dude, just take the money. It's cheap anyway. It's really cheap.
Yeah.
So I really liked Williamsburg, I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't surprise you probably.
No, I mean, I lived in Brooklyn for a while and mostly in Manhattan. Yeah. And it's just full of really interesting people that don't sleep and smoke weed.
Yes. Right? That's the vibe I got from that place. It was just like,
oh man,
it was funny.
You wonder why New York and San Francisco has the most productive people in the world. I don't know.
Maybe it's this imbalance.
Yeah, I think it's just the energy levels. I think the energy level in that city is when everyone around you has a project. That was something I noticed when I lived in New York. You could go to a coffee shop and work, and you'd stand up and say, hey, does anybody know about Sprite Kit in iOS? And like 5 hands would go up. You know, like everybody around you is working all the time. And they're not working because their boss is slaving them. They're working because they have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
They have a project. They have something they want to complete. And like that level of motivation is addictive.
Mm.
And everybody around you, you know, they're trying to be an actor or a film director or a software developer or an entrepreneur or something. Yeah. And they're relentless, and they came to New York to make it happen. And you know, that's one of the things I really miss about the city.
Yeah, I can imagine. I didn't get into that really because I couldn't talk to the locals in that level, right? You don't get to know people like that really. You see them, but it's like you don't interact really with them. But it doesn't surprise me that the city is somehow insanely busy.
Mm. Yeah, a thing I forgot to recommend to you to go see is NYC Resistor.
Oh yeah, that's a great place.
Did you go there?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Right.
Anyway, I have to start. I thought I have plenty of time.
Of course.
To see everything.
You always think about that. Yeah. Think that. Yeah.
So I took it very chill the first 2 days, and then I started to realize like, if you don't actually do the stuff, if you just walk around,
it's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
But then again, maybe it doesn't matter.
Maybe it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like funny. I decided I want to just meet someone local there. That was like my mission I gave to myself.
Because NYC Resistor would have been a great place to meet people, actually.
I know. Yeah, now that you say that, yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah. I also could have thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just decided to do something about it because I used to be very shy. Even phone calls were like a major thing for me when I was a teenager. And basically, step by step, I got out of this thing of being afraid of talking to people and embarrassing myself. And so I'm in this mood for a few years now already to just basically push me to do more weird stuff that the people don't do. Mm-hmm. When it comes to mm-hmm. meeting people. So what I did is I went to Reddit and I just said, yeah, I want to meet someone in New York. I'm there end of May.
Wow.
PM me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and people did.
So you're lucky you didn't
people end up. People did. Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't end up in a closet with like handcuffs around you or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. But I mean, I actually took the dating advice you have anyway, so meet at a public place, right?
Yeah.
So stuff like that. I mean, stuff you would just common sense you would use also if you
although if somebody's using Reddit, it's probably already okay.
That's also what I thought. That's already a pre-screening. Are you on Reddit?
Yes.
You seem like a cool guy already.
Exactly.
So I actually there was this one guy who kept messaging but never met. I told him, yeah, I'm there this evening, so just stop by if you feel like it. And he never responded to that, but always messaged me the next day again, which was like...
That's weird.
At some point, I stopped responding. It was like, dude, it's not going to happen. That's okay. But this other guy was really friendly, and I was like, then we met at a coffee place and actually talked for a few hours. It was really funny. We went to a park and walked around the city and whatever.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's okay to come in.
Yeah.
It's not top secret. Yeah, so that was fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
Shout out to Ravi. Oh, yeah. Indian guy.
He's not
studying. He's not listening. I don't know. Still.
Send him a link.
Nah, maybe you should send him a link. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah, shout out to him. He's now working... I think I forgot some Wall Street kind of thing, but it's about journalism.
Oh, wow.
It's really a special thing. I forgot what his studies are about, but yeah, really interesting stuff. So I can recommend doing stuff like that, hitting people up.
I always tell people when they go to New York, don't do the normal circuit, you know, like Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, Circle Line, all that crap.
Yeah.
Go to little shops, little neighborhoods, spend your time there because that's the best part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't see the Statue of Liberty.
Good.
Me neither.
I didn't go there. I was
in New York twice and I didn't see it.
I lived there for 11 years and I never went to the island.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now I feel better because everyone I told, I was like, you didn't go there? I was like, no, I know it from...
Yeah.
It's probably boring, right?
I went on top of the Empire State once and on top of Rockefeller once. So that's
I was on Rockefeller. I did that because I just love skylines.
I think one of these high places is a good idea to do.
I went to the top of the World Trade Center.
All right.
That was pretty cool. But that was a while ago.
Yeah. I can imagine. Was it before 2000?
I went to the new one as well. That was also interesting.
I just wanted to talk about that. I went there on my last day. I went there. And it was just... I just basically hit the right time because it was getting darker and darker.
Oh, yeah.
And at some point, they turn on the lights. So for people who don't know where the two towers are, they now basically dug this huge... square hole basically. It's a memorial now, and basically where the two towers are, it's just a giant waterfall. So water is flowing from all the sides into this basically hole, right? And I think it's amazing. I actually had the chills when I was there.
It's an impressive thing.
It's really impressive. I didn't think what to expect. I didn't look up pictures. I just decided I go there and I see what it's about, right? And I went there and I basically looked down and it was really dark.
Yeah.
And then I think after 10 minutes, I was really deep into my own head. Suddenly the light turned on and it was like amazing. Yeah. Mm. Then it really wasn't this other experience again.
Nice.
Yeah. So I can recommend going there at around, I don't know, 7 or whenever they turn on the lights.
That's the best time to go before dusk.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
That's very nice, yeah. So I can recommend that. It's a bit sad. And I didn't go to the museum next to it.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's probably just sad. I don't know. I've seen it from the outside.
I don't know.
Did they, when you were there, did they finish the, like, the, I remember they were building like a huge train station kind of thing.
They were right still there? Building it.
They were still building it, okay.
Wow. It was still a construction site. I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's like a huge train station or something being built there, like a public transport thing.
Probably.
I remember. But anyway, yeah. There's just like, there was this huge sort of round, half round structure.
If
I remember, but I don't know.
Like, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, and one of the other things I did was I went to comedy, stand-up comedy.
Oh.
Which was really good. I'm really into stand-up comedy, I have to say. Some people might not know. Ferdy knows.
I know.
It's basically the only thing I watch on Netflix, besides some other stuff. But yeah. And it was really good. It was a comedy cellar. Yeah. And it was really a great experience. And I have to say, there's nothing like that in the German-speaking part, I have to say.
Mm.
It's just a different beast.
Mm.
It's very... And it was all comedians. If you don't know the scene, the New York scene, you don't know those comedians. I knew some of those names because I kind of follow it a little bit. But they sometimes have surprise guests, which they don't announce. And one of the nights I went two times. And one of the nights, Aziz Ansari was on stage. You know the guy, right?
That one is well known, yeah.
That one is well known. Yeah, and that was amazing. Yeah, he had a really good set. And it's really fun because they try out new material in those smaller clubs to test out whether it works or not, right? To then bring it to the bigger shows where they actually are announced and headliner or whatever, right? So he was just trying out new stuff. It was really funny. So that was great stuff.
Mm. You didn't go see a musical on Broadway, did you?
I didn't, sadly. No, I should have.
You should have.
Yeah.
it's hit or miss. I one time got stuck in a musical behind a guy with the largest hairdo ever known to man. And I don't even know what show it was.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I saw a single minute of it.
Okay.
Like, yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
So, really, the whole hair thing was in front of you the whole time?
Yeah. Oh, that's... Basically, it was like...
And there was no free seats left that you could have gone...
No, it was completely packed. Mm. It was completely packed.
Oh, my God.
And the guy in front of me... I mean, it wasn't just me. It was like three rows behind me were also blocked because his hair was so massive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah.
He was like a dandelion. Anyway.
Because I think at Times Square, there's like this... there are like these last minute tickets you can get to musicals, right?
Yeah.
So you can get them like fairly cheaply for like the same evening.
Tickets without any vowels. Yeah, that place. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, when I was there, like that's where we got the tickets from.
Yeah.
That was.
I thought about it, but the weather was so nice that it really didn't feel like going inside. Mm. I don't know. It was like
I was there in middle of winter with, minus 10 degrees outside. So, you know.
So you were happy to go inside.
It was not a
good activity.
Yeah. But I was just walking around the city all the time, which was good.
So
Highland Park, which is really great. I'm amazed that they built stuff like that in the city.
Oh, the Highline?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really, really great. Cool. So that was a great recommendation.
It's the old elevated train lines, which sat for years unused. And somebody had the brilliant idea to turn them into a park.
Yeah.
Elevated park.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you see, when you walk there, you see all those flats on the right, on the left, which must be, on the left, sometimes probably not that expensive, but on the right, very expensive.
You see like very nice new buildings being built right next to these this track all along the way.
And
they're like they cost like millions,
those
flats for sure.
And one of the funniest things, I actually took pictures, the whole traffic light situation in New York is just so funny to me. They put traffic lights everywhere. I didn't really, in Central Park, where there's actually not really any cars except those park rangers who are driving around.
Mm-hmm. And there's like a road in the through the middle of it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Such a park drive, actually. Yeah.
But there's are there cars allowed, really?
Yes.
Only on certain streets. I think there's like two crossover streets. Okay. And it might be they limited it to taxis.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple. There's like four.
Four streets
that cross Central Park. But I'm not... Yeah, you might be right. Maybe they're only open for like taxis and public transport and this kind of stuff.
It might be. I don't know. They do it during certain times.
Yeah. Because I'm actually surprised they just don't ban cars at all. Right? Would make sense
to
me.
They've tested it in some neighborhoods. Cutting off the streets. I don't know where that went, but I'm also surprised. I mean, and you see in a lot of large cities, this is happening more and more.
Yeah. I'm really not talking about the neighborhoods. I'm really talking about Central Park.
Ah, Central Park.
Okay. Really Central Park. I'm surprised they actually allow cars, except those park rangers, which makes sense. But, right? And there's really just streets, and every, I don't know, whatever, 100 meters, there's just traffic lights and across, basically a crossing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, to me, I don't know. It's just funny. People were waiting there until it's green and then they cross the roads.
Yeah.
It felt like a joke. It's like, why do you put traffic lights here, right? Yeah. Everyone who drives here better stops at those things and lets people over, right? But no, you have to have traffic lights. And the best part was, near my place where I lived, there was this roundabout. And in the roundabout, they had traffic lights.
In the roundabout.
In I have pictures. In the roundabout, they have traffic lights. And you just have, in the middle of the night, no cars at all. A single car in the roundabout is waiting for green. And I was just, the first night I arrived there, I saw that. And I couldn't stop laughing. I was just like, I had to sit down. And I was like, this is not happening.
That's great.
I mean, first, traffic lights in the roundabout doesn't make any sense at all. Just doesn't. Second, why don't you just turn them off in the night when there's no traffic? It doesn't matter. You just turn on the yellow blinky things, which means just watch for yourself, right?
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, because then you can actually use the roundabout, which is made for, right? You just drive in when it's free and you don't when it's not.
Oh yeah, my God. I think traffic in New York in general is a special, special topic.
Yeah.
it was really funny. I don't know.
I always appreciated the timing of the lights on the avenues, like 6th Avenue or 5th Avenue. You know, you can go up and down all of Manhattan riding on the wave of green. And you see that the cab drivers kind of know this, and they move their way up to the front of the line, and then they get on one of these avenues and they can just go 60 streets without ever stopping, because if you go at the right speed, you can stay right on top. And, you know, you're in a cab and it's barreling towards a red light and you're thinking, he's going to run through it. He's going to run through it. And then it changes. And he knew it was going to change. And it's just like, wow. You know, and I think part of this is like the timing of all of these lights. They're just all on a rhythm.
Yes. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they would do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you have to do in order to even, you know, get traffic working somewhat in like a place like Manhattan.
They somehow manage. Although it's a whole nother level. Like in Tokyo, I was amazed at how incredibly responsive the lights are there. And everybody, you know, in the US, everyone, the light turns red and on the other side, people are crossing the street, which means that everyone who turns has to wait.
Yes.
In Tokyo, they made it so that all the traffic goes in two directions and everybody's waiting, and then both directions stop and you're allowed to walk. And it's so much smarter because it allows the traffic to flow.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's no chance that somebody's going to be walking in front of a car.
Yes.
So that was an eye opener for me.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. But anyway, there's so many, basically traffic lights you have to cross, even as a Fußgänger.
Pedestrian.
Yes, pedestrian, exactly. Even as a pedestrian. And on day two, you realize, okay, no one stops at red. Everyone just jaywalks, right? As we said before. It was like so funny, but it took me a day. And I was like always waiting. It's like, oh, not another red light again. I was just waiting. that was green and I was walking over and I realized no one stops. And I was afraid that a car might approach and I'm just, yeah, you know,
that's country. But that's like normal when you're in a new place, right?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
don't know the rules of the place because, you know, some cities you might get run over when you just cross.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And
you never know.
There's still some places where you just don't do it because you don't see the cars approaching and it's like, you know, sure. you have to be careful. But most just walk over by red, which to me, it sounds like, why are there even lights there? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
That was fun.
Cool.
Yeah, maybe one little thing that was interesting to me. I went to the Jewish Heritage Museum. And as Central Europeans, you hear a lot about Holocaust, right? So it's not the obvious choice to do when you're in New York.
Yeah.
But I knew that there was a lot of Jews that basically fled to the US, right? And especially New York, because that just makes sense. It's first kind of the first step, right? So I was just interested in how they portray the culture and how it's different from maybe what we hear. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting. It was basically three floors. Have you been? Probably not, right? Mm-hmm. So it's three floors. The first floor is basically just culture, the Jewish culture in general, basically from very, very old until basically World War II. What was happening. Then the second floor is really the Holocaust, and the third floor is more like how is it today, outlook, whatever, it's kind of like this more lighthearted floor, I would say. Yeah. And it was really interesting to see first the culture stuff, a lot of stuff I didn't know, and you had a lot of basically letters from Austrian and German and even Swiss Jews. It was really German centric kind of, which was very interesting to me because I thought that's just my perspective, right? I heard a lot about German speaking Jews, but apparently that's one of the bigger populations anyway. I mean, obviously they did that because of the Holocaust. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, but there is also like a connection in the heritage, isn't there? Like,
yeah,
there's this language Yiddish, right?
Yes, which is very
close to German.
Exactly.
And
they actually had songs in Yiddish, and I understood them. It was amazing. It was That's very cool. Nice to hear. Yeah. And the very interesting part was the second floor, which was the floor I learned the least because I knew everything kind of, right? I mean, you really know a lot of details because in school we really learn about this, which is perfect, right? It shouldn't be any other way. So as a Central European German speaking guy, you don't learn much new stuff, but just the way they presented it was really interesting. They really presented it from the perspective of the average Jew, right? In Switzerland or Germany, you tend to have this fact-based way of
portrayal,
right? It's like, and then the party decided to do that, and then they decided to do that, right? It's all from top down, basically from a journalistic view, right? How they portrayed that. And they kind of took a different approach. They basically always said what it looked like from the perspective of just the average Jew, how they felt at that point, right? It's like really interesting. I could talk a lot about this, but I just want to pick out this one part where it's like, it was 1937 or something. And it's like, yeah, quite a few Jews tried to basically get the papers to leave the country. But for a lot of them, it just was this bureaucratic act, and they couldn't succeed. They really tried and tried and tried. And that was a thing I really didn't realize. I know that they made it harder and harder to leave the country, but just how hard it was, and that some people, they really showed that some people knew that bad things are gonna happen, and they tried to get out the normal way and couldn't, right? And then they also showed that some just didn't think it was that bad. It's like, it's not nice, but let's wait, right? And it really showed those two, this really balanced act of like, that part was like thinking like this, and that part actually tried to get out but couldn't.
Yeah. How and bad just, could it be?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And which really brought me to modern day
US.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, right? Me too.
Like, and I was reading and I was like, I kind of know a president who is exactly... And not everyone's like, It's really bad. Not really bad.
Not even only the US, right? It's also like,
no, I don't want to make it sound like that, but it was like just being in the US, it was like,
yeah,
very obvious.
This should be obvious to everyone now.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. The signs of unraveling. Do you believe it or not? And
exactly.
Am I part of this? Am I affected by this or not?
Exactly.
And it's a judgment call.
Exactly. And it was really just, how crazy it was. It was like, it wasn't this imminent threat. Like, oh, we have to leave now. It was this year by year, it got more obvious that things are wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you actually decided to leave, when it was like, it was becoming obvious, that's exactly the time where they made it hard to leave the country. And you think from a today's standpoint, you always think like, but if they knew that, why didn't they leave, right? And then you realize they couldn't leave.
They couldn't. There was
no
choice.
Leave. Yeah. And that was really, I had shivers when I was reading the thing. Is like, that's really just, that's crazy. Just letting someone through that process for 1.5 years. It's like, now you're not leaving the country. Yeah. I think that's the most evil thing. And it's just like, I realized when I was at that place. So I recommend going there to get a new perspective.
Mm.
Yeah. Also, the way they just talked about it was really this plain and simple English, right? It's like, that's the difference between German and English speaking. I think it's very important in English that you just make your point, right? And, mm-hmm. and repeat and summarize and like very clear messaging. And in German, it's all about, you try to formulate it nice and it needs to read nice. And it's like,
And it still needs to be accurate, you know?
Exactly. Like,
you're trying to be scientifically accurate.
Exactly. And it's like, just like for a purpose like this, it's actually better to go the other way. Mm. So now I brought the mood down. I'm sorry, but I think it was really, that's my tip. If you have a rainy day in New York, go to the Jewish Heritage Museum.
All right. And then go see some stand-up comedy.
Exactly. I actually did that. Not the same day.
Yeah.
But I think that's also good. Then you should enjoy life again. So and look at the bright side.
So in terms of like really touristy stuff, what did you do? You went on top of the Rockefeller?
Yeah, Highland Park.
Highland Park. Yeah. What else? Anything else?
Let me think. I think comedy is also a pretty touristy thing to do. I mean, there's locals there, but
Yeah.
But not a lot. Central Park, also pretty touristy thing to do.
Did you walk across, did you walk over Brooklyn Bridge?
I didn't walk over it.
You should.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah.
But I drove over it.
Right. You drove?
With the metro.
Yeah, the metro.
Oh, okay. You rode on the subway.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's like you're driving in New York? What's wrong with you?
No, I would never.
It's insane.
I would never. I drove in LA. That was a bad idea.
That's maybe even more dangerous.
It was very dangerous. I told the story already.
Except you could only go like 10 miles an hour. So
yes. And also you decide to turn left when it's green.
Yeah.
Which is a bad
idea. You turn whenever you want. There is no law. You just do whatever feels
according
right.
According to the policeman who stopped him.
No, actually, just to
apparently there is some kind of law.
There's the unwritten law. If you are at an intersection in LA and the traffic light turns green and you want to turn left, you actually wait. You wait until traffic from opposite is through.
Yeah.
And then you turn left.
Okay.
But never ever make the mistake of driving into the intersection until it's your time to turn left, right? Even though it's green, because it might be that it turns red again before you actually have the chance of turning left, which is exactly what happened to me. So I was at the intersection and it was red again. And that was a very bad idea. And I had a heart attack almost. And then I had the GTA moment of actually a police officer. It's like, saw me.
So you had like 4 stars.
Exactly. I had immediately 4 stars in the helicopter.
Following
me. Yeah.
You start getting out and walking around the car.
Exactly. Like, I felt like just
jump out
and just run
and jump into his car.
Exactly.
He's drive off. Yeah.
No, actually getting into another car, just pulling the person out and driving off, right? Yes. That's the way.
Which happens in LA, actually. Yeah.
Get into a faster car.
Exactly.
That's the most important thing. Faster, yeah, better car. Ooh, I like that.
A Hummer.
Yeah.
And if you feel like fun, you just take a motorcycle.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Let's do some recommendations.
Recommendation time. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Go for it.
Yeah. There's this Swiss comedian guy called Victor Jacobo. You probably don't know him. But if you're a Swiss person, you know him. And he actually has a podcast. Because everyone now has a podcast.
You guys started it.
I wouldn't go that far. But let's say we were ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
we were.
Yeah.
We did podcasts before it was cool.
Exactly. Badge of honor. No, and he has a podcast and he talks to other comedians, mostly Swiss comedians. It's really good, I have to say. I like the guy. And he has a very nice way of basically interviewing other comedians. It's really good. So the name is insanely bad, I have to say. It's called Jacobodcast or Jacobobodcast.
Oh.
Some kind of mix with his last name and
podcast. Jacobodcast.
Yeah. Which is just insanely bad for a name. So,
bad.
Victor, if you hear this, like, just no, don't rename yourself.
This is the guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He has a very distinctive face.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think I've seen him before.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can recommend it.
Okay.
It's nice.
Nice.
It's nice to also hear Swiss German in a podcast.
Other than ours.
Other than us. So fist bump to Victor.
Yes. Very good. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. And he had Hazel Brugger, Dominic Deville, and Gabriel Vetter. Those are three episodes I heard and I can recommend already. There's more episodes. Not a lot yet, but he's producing, so that's good. Yeah. And Hazel Brugger is one really young comedian. I think we talked about her.
Yeah.
And she, together with a German comedian, has this YouTube show, which is insanely funny, which is called Die Thomas Spitzer und Hazel Brugger haben eine Show.
Nice.
Which is just nonsense, the way I like it. And I think you have to watch it. It's German, I'm sorry, but it's just every episode is 6 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and they do this kind of weird, nonsensical, late-night thing where they have an interview with Angela Merkel and it's actually a dog who doesn't respond. And I mean, that sounds weird and it's actually funny. So
sounds like good shtick, as they say.
Yeah. It's
good shtick.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So just watch that show. It's like 6 minutes of your life
okay.
a few times over.
Will do.
Like, yeah, it's fun. I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hey, we should listen to some music. I completely forgot.
Before we do that,
yeah.
I have a quick recommendation.
Because
that goes into the comedy kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's called Alliteration am Arsch.
Uh-huh.
It's a podcast by Reinhard Remfort, who you may know from a podcast called Methodisch Inkorrekt, where they talk about physics.
Yeah.
And stuff and science in general. And together with an actual comedian, with Bastian Bielendorfer.
Okay.
Which you may or may not know. And they basically, yeah, it's sort of, you know, it's a bit like us two dudes talking, but it's more fun.
Okay.
Than we are and will ever be. Because at least one of them is an actual comedian. So, yeah, there you go. it's only one episode just started. The program, but
yeah,
it's a good episode. So I hope there will be more good stuff from there.
Cool.
Okay, that's it.
So yeah, Jeremy does his own music. We'll talk about it after
our sponsors.
After our sponsors. Talk to your doctor about synthesizers.
Yeah. Yes.
Warning.
Nice.
Hey, beautiful.
Are you still awake?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was meditating.
Yes, exactly. It feels very, very meditative.
Yeah.
This music.
Did you record it at night or does it just sound like you did?
It sounds like night, yes.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I often, because I work during the day, I'm often recording late in the evening when I get home.
Yeah.
And that was all analog from a modular synthesizer that I've been building since January.
Yeah. We should link your Instagram because you show
this
stuff in basically live.
Yep. And I've kind of caught a wave which has happened. I've given a couple of talks about this, but modular synthesizers go back to the 1960s and you know, entered popular music in the 70s. And all through the 80s and 90s, through the dearth of, you know, synth pop bands that kind of disappeared and were replaced by guitar and keyboards and music, electronic instruments more and more were sample based and wanted to imitate real instruments. The real sound of experimentation with sound, analog electronic sound, disappeared kind of for a while, except in the most extreme artistic kind of ways or academic ways.
Yeah.
And now it's back, and it's back big time.
Okay.
And there are currently, I think it's about 5,000 modules on the market, different modules that you can buy, and it's picking up. It's starting to show up on the covers of electronic and music magazines and things like that. Shops are carrying this stuff again. Anyway, I mean, I got really into it because I studied music in college. I studied as a jazz composer and I play piano, but I'm a programmer. I've been a developer my whole life. And I was always fascinated by analog and electronic instruments, and I decided to build my own and doing it this way. And when you make music on these things, you're not really playing it in a traditional way. You have to design your instrument by patching together the wires and kind of have a concept of what you're going to do. And a lot of it's chance and happy accidents and experimentation. And you hear something and you kind of go with it. And it's very meditative, and a lot of my tracks, I have to be careful that they don't end up being 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Because I just really, I enjoy the sound and the textures and the feeling that you get from certain, like all of the percussive sounds, they're not drums or samples, they're pulses of a square wave going through a Vactrol, which is like a low pass gate that cuts off because of an electronic trigger. And it's like, you really design this stuff like a little program or a contraption. And then when you're done, you'll never reproduce what you just did again.
That's what I wanted to ask. So basically recording a track like this is having it set up and you know which knobs to turn, then you can basically tweak it.
Yeah, you basically perform by turning the knobs and tweaking the knobs and playing around a bit within the limits of what you've set up.
Yeah.
But what we just heard is not one one recording, right?
It's all one take.
Oh, it's one take.
All of the stuff I post on SoundCloud, it's all one take.
All take.
Okay. Yeah, I
assumed you were mixing it after, like you had different tracks and mixing them.
It's all one take. And I mean, there's no computer involved at all except to be used purely as a tape recorder.
Yeah.
So there's no effects, no software plugins, nothing. It's all direct analog out of the synth into a recording device, basically. Yeah. And once you're done with the song, if you want to do something else, you have to unplug everything. Yeah, you pull it all apart and it's gone.
Yeah.
And as a result...
Do you take pictures of your setups?
I started that way, but
there's
something very zen in saying that it's done.
It's over.
Yeah.
It will never be like this again, and it's okay like that.
And this was like a real breakthrough for me, because for years I struggled to make music. Although I love playing music and writing music, I struggled to make music because I would get lost in a sea of menus and options and possibilities.
Yeah.
And I would end up with a massive list of unfinished projects, which were not good enough, and I never went back to them.
Yeah.
But with the modular synth, you get to a certain point, you say, now I'm going to hit record. because I like what's going and I don't think I can take it any further and I want to do something else. So I'm just going to record it.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to throw it away and it's done. And as a result, sometimes when I get something really promising happening, it might end up sitting in my basement, patched together and waiting for days. And I'll come back to it and turn it on and something completely different's happening. Mm. And I'm like, that's the thing. It's like, because it's all analog and it's all electronic and you can't like save presets. Yeah. Sometimes things change. You have to wait 20 minutes for the oscillators to get in tune. So, you know, when I get home, I have to turn the machine on and just wait for it to warm up like a toaster. So you brew
the sounds.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It's really like that.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's just, it's, I absolutely love this, this thing that I found. It was like what was missing from my life. And there's a whole underground of people on YouTube, of people on SoundCloud, on Mixcloud.
Yeah.
Artists like Emily Sprock and YouTubers like this guy Mylar Melodies is his name, or you know, there's software developers who are creating firmware for some of these modules, which do contain digital electronics, but they're controlling analog. They're all small companies with like 3-4 employees, most of them, sometimes an individual guy.
Yes.
I just got a module in the mail from a dude in London who's building this stuff in his living room. He's you know, he'll build like 50 modules and when he's done, they're sold out and they're gone forever.
Wow.
And it's a cottage industry.
Yeah.
And it's super cool. It's super cool.
I was like, I heard your talk at a conference where I was attending when you also talked about modular synthesizers. So I, and around the same time I sort of came across this podcast episode of Omega Tau. Mm-hmm. Omega Tau is like a science and engineering podcast, but sometimes the guy who does it like goes off in a different direction that's not strictly science and or engineering.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of is engineering, at least. He recorded an episode about synthesizers with a guy called Rutger Vlick. Mm. You might know him or not.
Not
his
sure.
company is River Creative Technology.
Okay. Yeah.
From the Netherlands.
Oh yeah.
And he like he builds modules himself as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And sells them.
Yeah.
All this stuff.
And there's hundreds of these little companies.
Yeah. Exactly. So he has one of those. So that's why that's I jumped in there.
Yeah.
And this interview with him is like 3.5 hours long.
Wow.
But it's really good because he goes into like all the like technical stuff, like how does an oscillator work and what is, you know, all this kind of shit. Like, it's really detailed.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's a very, very fun thing to listen to for sure. And yeah, along the same lines, there's another episode of the same podcast that's about software analog effects,
mm-hmm.
where he talks to a guy from Native Instruments,
mm-hmm.
who actually builds, you know, analog stuff in software.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
he sort of tries, you know, tries to emulate whatever analog equipment can do in software.
Right? Yeah, yeah, which is a dark art.
Exactly,
in a way.
Exactly.
Emulation.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. But that's a sort of interesting engineering aspect, I think, in this episode, because there's sort of two ways you can approach the problem, right? One is like a black box thing,
mm-hmm.
where you try not to think about what's inside this analog circuit that you're trying to emulate,
mm-hmm.
but rather try to design the sound somewhat, you know, through digital measures, through software measures, to be as close as possible. Or there's the other approach, which is sort of simulating the real analog circuit.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
That's the white box approach, you could say. So there's these two ways of doing
it. There's actually for anybody listening that is into this stuff or wants to learn about it, you know, it's extremely expensive hobby to get into. I'm selling my car to finance my habit.
And wow.
But there is an open source project called VCV Rack, which you should link to in your show notes, maybe. Mm-hmm, but VCV Rack is the end-all be-all of virtual modular synthesizer setup. It's free software. You can download it. There's a number of modules you can get started with and just start patching stuff. And it actually does a pretty good job, but it's not the same.
Yeah. And so this is just the software that's supposed to do the same thing as you can.
It behaves the same.
Yeah.
but it doesn't quite feel the same or sound the same.
Right.
And part of what's incredible about working with real analog and electrical circuits is the things that happen. For instance, I have an oscillator in my synth where if I plug a cable into the frequency jack and I just hold that cable in my hand, it starts to make some insane noises. Now, the only way you could model this in software is by simulating the electrical interference environment of the room and the capacitance of my body.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, yeah. I mean, and there's also moments where you're turning a knob and you get to a sweet spot, and there's so many sweet spots in a modular synth, like with a filter or with an oscillator, uh-huh. where you get to a certain sound and things start to resonate and things start to happen and you feel it in your hand where that is. And this is the difference between, you know, there's a reason that people don't play software violins.
Yes.
You cannot get an expressive emotional performance out of a software violin. You need to have your fingers contacting wood and and, you know, feeling that horse hair in your hand and everything. And it's really an experience. Yeah. If you have a chance to play with one of these machines and sit down with it for 30 minutes.
Actually, at Chaos Communication Congress, there was like, they had like this art installation. That was basically a modular synth. So you had all these modules, hardware modules, and you had like a whole bunch of cables that you could plug in around. Cool. And then there was like speakers at the top so you could listen to what it did and so on.
Yes.
And there, like, the idea was it was basically mounted on, like, there were like, I don't know, six of these racks mounted on this round structure that was turning around at the same time. So that was sort of the art installation, and you couldn't even stand still while doing this. You had to walk.
Oh, that's great.
And walk around the thing that was moving at the same time.
That's really cool.
It was a fun thing for sure.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and of course, you know, like 95% of the people who tried something couldn't, you know, it couldn't get it to make anything that sounds remotely like music.
Yeah.
Because first of all, if there's nothing plugged in, getting an initial sound is already a challenge.
Yeah, you kind of need to know.
You have to know what the modules do.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Otherwise, you have no chance. Yeah.
And that's one of the things I love about it too. Is it's just, you know, some people get into collecting coins or playing cards or trading cards or whatever. But with these modules, you start to understand. Wait a minute, this Dopfer A160-1 clock divider actually has a way that it can divide a beat into prime numbers. And therefore, I could actually compose a piece where the notes never really line up or repeat in a predictable way. And then you start to realize that this is one of thousands of modules that are available, but this one module, I've got to get it. And where can I get this? And okay, maybe I need to order it from Germany, shit. From Schneiderladens, or maybe I need to go to Modular Addict in California. I actually flew to London to get some modules that I really wanted that I couldn't get here. You know, I've been to the Netherlands. I've been to Spain. I've been Portugal. You know, it's crazy. I mean, these things are so hard to get, and in secondhand marketplaces is also a really good place to get them as well. Yeah. Ricardo has a lot of modular stuff, which I'm very fortunate to have access to that site. But anyway,
very nice. You started in January, you said?
Well, yeah. I mean, what happened was somewhere in December, I was thinking to myself, God, I miss making music. And I had started playing piano again. I started more seriously last fall playing jazz again on the piano, but it wasn't enough for me. I wanted to do something more organic and interesting sonically. And I started flipping around on YouTube looking for, I just wanted to buy a keyboard or something. And I was thinking, well, maybe I'll buy myself a new synthesizer or something that maybe does something interesting. And I kept running across these videos from, you know, because YouTube's fantastic at recommendations. So basically, I can blame Google for understanding my interests and feeding me towards these videos that basically were talking about modular stuff. And I knew about this field and I knew about the history of the synths and everything else, but I never thought once maybe I should try to do this. I just thought it's too expensive and too complicated.
Yeah.
And there was this one video from this guy about a synth made by a company called IntelliGel called the Atlantist, which is based on a classic Roland SH-101. And this video, I watched it and it sounded so beautiful, I started weeping. the sound out of this module. And it hit me so hard emotionally, I bought it like a month later. And then I got this module and I realized I can't do anything with it because I need to plug it into a rack.
Yes.
And I need power for the rack, and I need cables, and I need something to plug it into to get the sound out. And, you know, and I realized, oh my God, I just bought, like, you know, it's like you go to IKEA and you come back with one piece of wood.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It was like I couldn't do anything with it. So that forced me to kind of learn what else I needed, and it went from there. No. So, yeah. And just thousands of hours of reading, watching YouTube videos, listening to podcasts, researching. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's anyway, I think humanity would be lost without YouTube, right? I really often, when I have to do something I never did before, my instinct is like, there's probably...
Yeah.
Open the door.
Yeah.
My poor cat is... Oh, no, wait. She's got a mouse.
Yes.
Don't let her in.
Okay.
That will be really disturbing.
Okay. It's fine.
Yeah. But
it's
fine.
Yeah. It's like everything is on YouTube somehow. Everyone made...
It's incredible.
How to...
Yeah. And more importantly is the way they filter through the information. Like, if you want to learn anything from how to build an aquarium to, you know, how to build an electronic circuit, it's available to you. And I remember as a kid reading Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's basically what YouTube has kind of become. I thought it was Wikipedia. Wikipedia explains to you what something is, but YouTube explains to you how to do it yourself.
Yes.
And this is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's peer-to-peer knowledge sharing.
Exactly.
And there's a bunch of garbage on it, but boy, are they good at filtering the garbage.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the golden thing they've done. It's incredible.
Along the lines of YouTube and music, I have another recommendation in case you didn't know that. Do you know Wintergatan?
Mm-mm.
You know it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's basically this one guy who is basically YouTube famous for his marble machine.
Oh, right. I've seen the videos.
This,
I didn't
this
know
guy, right? Yeah. Yeah, probably know him.
Okay.
Because you know the video. But he's building the next level marble machine, Marble Machine X.
Oh, that's what cool. It's called. That's super
And basically, his channel has become this DIY channel where he just builds this machine.
Yes.
For like years now, he's been building machine. It's nearing completion now, slowly.
That's cool.
But it's really good. Like, it's great. It makes for great watching, this video, because
that's fantastic.
There's music in it, because he has original music in every video that he made himself, because he's like an amazing musician, a multi-instrumentalist, and so on. And at the same time, he builds this machine, and there's all this stuff he learns about, you know, crafting something along the way, because he's not, like, that's not his, you know, his main area. But now he's like he's become a pro in like CAD, like designing stuff in computer aided design, you know, CNC machining stuff.
Yes.
He does all the time now, 3D printing stuff, you know, all this. Like, so this is great.
Definitely
videos.
Have to watch this because you just described all of my hobbies.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, maybe you should build a marble machine too.
Maybe so, but it's got to make sound. That's the thing.
Yeah, it will after it's done.
That's cool. I should say another really fun recommendation is there's a lad on YouTube named, his channel is Look Mum No Computer. And he's this young British guy in London, and he's absolutely bonkers. He's like an awesome musician, and he's totally irreverent. Like, he looks like he came out of Trainspotting or one of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
But he builds his own synthesizers, and he solders stuff together. And he's literally like, you know, the layman's approach to, you want to build a circuit? Here's how you build a circuit. Just take this and throw it together and whatever, you know, throw this out around. Who cares? And he made an organ out of flamethrowers. He made a keyboard with, I think it was 100 Furby dolls that were all making noises. I mean,
oh
the guy
God.
Is off his nut. Wow. He's crazy. And he's insane. Such a good teacher, too. I learned quite a bit about electronic circuits from him. Vintage chips, for example, these old keyboards from the 1970s had integrated circuit chips on them to do certain things that nobody ever needed again, so they stopped producing them. Now they're back people are making clones of these vintage IC chips. And this is awesome because you can go online and for $3 or $4, you can buy a vintage chip, throw it onto a breadboard, and suddenly you have a classic analog synth that you've done with, like, I don't know, $7 worth of parts. Mm. This is, it's a really cool time right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably like connected to this 8-bit movement as well, some way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, with, you know,
it's kind of the opposite,
yes,
right?
Yes, this somehow is kind of getting like, into the semi-digital early, yes, early age. Yeah, like, yeah, SID chips and, yeah, and bit crushing and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that stuff is also cool. And I have to admit, like, as analog as I am, I have ventured into getting some granular synthesis and sampling modules and ripping sounds apart and reversing them and playing micro samples in random ways. And
yeah.
So I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
The cat is somehow triggering.
Yeah, my cat has learned how to turn lights off and on, apparently. That's impressive. Wow.
Interesting. Yeah, anyway.
It's amazing. Yeah. But it's so funny to me. It's like, as always, there's this pendulum, right? It's like somehow everything gets digital, right? And music making right now is really this hyper produced thing, right? I'm not, yes, not judging. It's like, just that's, yeah, the way it is, right? You can record and then you can infinitely tweak and cut and whatever, right? And there's software that just does it for you somehow, and it's,
yeah,
like, it's fully automated, and at which point it's like, okay, now we have to kind of start over, right? And then you just do a rewind and there's no computer involved at all, right?
Or maybe it was really great in the first place and we got a bit lost, because I think technology, I'd look at it a different way. Technology often takes us away from what was pure and beautiful with things. Yeah. So as we get technology, whether it's a phone or whatever, we lose something in the process, and then people go back to the source, so to speak. But I mean, just back to YouTube for a second, as great as YouTube is at recommending videos, the irony is, when I'm watching all of these videos about analog and modular synths and vintage electronics, it's showing me ads for, it knows that I'm into music, and it's showing me ads for how to do great music production using modern digital tools.
Yeah.
So it's trying to upgrade my skills.
Yes.
And I'm like, wow, you know, they actually see that I'm watching all these videos.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get me to become an electronic music producer using, you know, Logic Audio and plugins.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what their algorithm wants me to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe two other recommendations from this from this podcast, Omega Tau, mm-hmm, about music. There's an artist called Arian.
Okay. You know, yeah.
There's basically this guy, Arian Lucassen,
mm-hmm,
which he's sort of a multi-instrumentalist kind of composer guy too. And he's like, he has this project called Arian, and it's basically progressive rock opera kind of stuff, mm-hmm, what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So basically he makes these like big concept albums that, you know, tell a story and take him like 2 years to produce.
Wow.
But yeah, that's sort of his passion project. And he basically composes all the stuff himself, you know, plays like at least the guitars and the synths himself.
It's very nice.
And then gets guest musicians in, especially vocalists.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has like, because it's like opera kind,
mm-hmm,
because it has a story and everything. He has characters, right? And all the characters are voiced by like different vocalists who like sing their parts, right?
Wow.
And he has like these fantastic vocalists, like from, you know, most of them out of the metal sort of area, but wow, there's like fantastic singers there. And he sort of, yeah, that's what he makes in terms of music.
I saw a clip about his stuff on one of the blogs I follow, that I think it's Disquiet, which follows a kind of edge music, so to speak, ambient and experimental stuff and things like that. And
yeah, I mean, his stuff is really special. Like, it's very special music. But
that's cool.
It's my kind of music.
That's cool.
And this interview is great. It's in English as well. So
nice.
They talk for like 2.5 hours about how Arian's music is produced, basically.
Cool.
And then there's another one, which is with a guy who actually also a music producer who's like also, connected to Arian through the Arian live show. Mm-hmm. There has been an Arian live show, which is, you know, hard to do because, you know, the guy plays most of the instruments himself usually. So there, you know, to arrange it on that complex music, to arrange that, to play it on stage is like pretty hard to do. Mm-hmm. So that's like, because it's that hard to do it, there's another guy who does this. And that's this other guy here, Joost van den Broek, who's like a music producer and also a huge synth guy.
That's cool.
As well. So
that's very
this
cool.
is, yeah, the other thing. Sandlane Studios is his thing. And they talk for 2 hours.
Nice.
About music production in this studio. So yeah, all the links will be in the show notes. Yeah, generally I can recommend this Omega Tau, and recently I've been on this sort of music, you know, getting from one episode to the next in this music subgenre of Omega Tau. Some of these interviews are like years old, but they're still really good. Yeah, just nice. That's the end of the recommendation part. You can go on with whatever.
Talking about synthesizers?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. One other thing I would mention that I would love to inspire people to check out is generative music. Mm-hmm. So like, it's kind of been very academic for a while, and there's development environments that have been around for more than 10 years. Things like Pure Data and Super Collider, where you can write code that writes music. But of course, in the modular world, you can also do this, and you can do it with basically functions and waves. Mm-hmm. And those waves and functions get translated to sequences of notes. Mm-hmm. And by combining and adding different waves together, you end up creating very complex movements. And if you can imagine a symphony from Beethoven is basically, you know, you have 10 minutes of different sections.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the same thing on a modular synthesis. And generative music is really fascinating. If you go to YouTube and search for generative modular music, basically you will watch a video of a synthesizer sitting still with a bunch of wires in it, and it is inventing a piece of music.
Mm.
And the person has kind of designed the conditions,
mm-hmm.
but once they start it, they step back. And what happens is unique, and it will never happen again. And this is one of the things I love the most is this, it's almost like gardening. You can decide where you're going to plant something.
Mm-hmm.
You can do all the right conditions, but you are not going to be in control of how that plant's going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You can do your best to kind of guide it, but it's going to happen the way it's going to happen. And generative music is cool. There's even festivals now where people, they go up on stage and they have 10 minutes and they set their machine up and they're allowed to start it and they're not allowed to touch it again. And this is such a cool art form. And there are people out there doing this. If you go to YouTube and search for modular generative music, and you'll start to see some fantastic, inspiring stuff. And it's like a whole new kind of field that's emerging that was buried in academia. And now it's somehow available to people to do in a more, let's say, common way, conventional way. It's documented, it's discussed, it's coming to life.
Yeah.
And I think that's super cool.
But I guess that's different from, you know, like, for instance, using machine learning to, you know,
that's too smart.
Look at all Mozart's music and then come up with a new, unique Mozart piece.
Yeah, you can do that too, but I kind of think that's a bit of cheating because you're feeding it existing stuff. I mean,
true.
What I love about the idea of generative music is that you actually don't know what's going to happen, and the only thing you can base it on is your best instincts about how your kind of equipment works and what kind of sounds you like, and hope for the best. So like in my modular, for example, I have something called a sequential switch, and you can plug a bunch of cables into it, and maybe you have 8 cables plugged into it, but only one will be active at a time. And by sending another voltage to it, I can tell it to switch to the next slot. Now, when that happens is the question. It could be triggered by a random number generator. It could be triggered by movement in the room because of my electrical capacitance. I don't know. But the point is, you know, things end up happening and the results are completely unexpected. And it's often really beautiful and really cool because it kind of brings, in a way, music closer to nature in the sense that it's going to naturally settle into its rhythm of what's working. Mm-hmm. And follow the laws of physics and you know, electricity and everything else. And it's really cool. It's a cool field. And I would definitely say, you know, spend a little time checking out some examples of this stuff, and you would be surprised at how musical and inspiring it can be.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Good recommendations. Okay. Do you have any idea when we have trains back?
I do have.
Very good.
Yeah, I checked it. I would have raised the flag.
Okay, yeah.
If we wouldn't have any chance of getting back.
Good.
So the thing is, there's one driving right now.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a 35
yeah, exactly.
and an 04.
Yeah, I was looking at the watch and it's like, nah, I'm not going to stop.
Well, worst case, I could drive you back to Zurich in the car I'm about to sell.
There's another one in an hour.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
At 12:35?
Mm.
All right, perfect.
Oh, wow.
So we can make another half an hour or so.
We could, yeah. So
we don't
all depends on our energy levels.
Yes.
That's actually a good question. So anything that we want to talk about? There's
necessarily.
Yeah, because there's nothing urgent on my side, to be honest.
Well, maybe it's a good place to end.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. When you're making music, it's good to know when to pull the plug.
Exactly.
I can make one last small crazy suggestion for a YouTube thing or another YouTube channel you can watch.
Okay.
Have you heard about this channel called Ants Canada?
Mm.
No? It's basically by this guy who has like 6 colonies of ants in his place.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. And he's like really, really, really into his ants. Like, and he's like, he gets super excited about everything that's happened with his ants, ant colonies. Like the way they grow, the way they, you know, evolve and stuff. And he basically, yeah, every week or so there's a new episode and he talks about one of his colonies, what happened and so on. And he really has a way of crafting his YouTube videos so they're like super intense and super entertaining, right? He makes this whole big thing about it, this big story, and like, I couldn't believe what happened next. Can you believe it, AC family? This and that and blah, 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 and so on, right? Really, really.
That's awesome.
Like, very energetic, and yeah, it's fun.
That's cool.
Just give it a try. Cool. Watch any of his videos, and you will see how it is and whether you like it or not.
That's cool. Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Ants are awesome.
Ants are really awesome. Yeah,
yes. Maybe I can make music with ants somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you should get an ant farm as well in your basement.
I like that idea. The ant farm module in my modular.
Exactly.
That would be YouTube worthy.
Absolutely. Okay.
Great. Yeah.
Cool.
I think.
Yeah, I think thanks for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really great.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
Your second English podcast?
Yeah, I think it is, right?
Yeah, wow.
There's no other. Yeah. And the last time we really got good feedback. I didn't want to put you on pressure.
Yeah, it's good you told me that at the end. Otherwise,
exactly.
I would have behaved weirdly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I couldn't predict what would happen if we told you before.
Last episode was also, you know, a bit special, I'd say. Like,
yeah.
it's not one of our usual episodes. One is, today is a bit more like our usual episodes, I'd say. A bit more conventional.
Yeah.
Not to say it's bad, but it's more like, it fits more into the whole, you know,
canon.
in the canon, right? Exactly.
Let's not get meta here. Let's get out of here. Any last words?
No, no. I wish everybody an excellent evening and time when they're listening to this, and explore something beautiful, discover something great.
Exactly. Absolutely. Do stuff.
Stop listening to Oh, wait.
Damn.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.